Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network proudly presents Pro Wrestling Obsession Live. And well, 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 the gang is all here tonight. With me, I've got Sean the Blitz Forrester. How are you, Sean?
Doing good.
I also have my comrade, the Bowmeister Bo Johnson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome. I also have my personal hero, Miss Mojo, Ashley Farmer. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. And we have our very special guest on the line with us right now, someone that the WWE has voted the most iconic mustache in the history of professional wrestling, Big Bully Busick. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm fine, guys. Thanks for having me on. I look forward to our interview here and whatever we're going to talk about.
No, we definitely appreciate you being here. So I guess one thing a lot of people aren't really aware of is that you, before you even got into the world of professional wrestling, was really big into and still are into powerlifting. Tell us a little bit how you got involved in that and what your plans are for that.
Well, the powerlifting started way back when I was 15 years old, and oddly enough, it was a professional wrestler that inspired me on that, and that was Bruno Sammartino. And I just took it from there. And since 15 years old, I can tell you without reservation, I've spent at least 4 to 6 hours every week of my life since then in a gym, up to and including today.
That's awesome. What was the allure of it for you?
There was, I've always had the lure of strength athletes and being able to, the strong man feats. Like when I was a kid growing up, you seen the strong man stuff and the weightlifters on the Olympics, and that just always fascinated me, and it just took off for me, and that allure, like you said, has stuck with me ever since.
The funny thing is now everybody is into, you know, the pecs and the ripped bodies and things like that. You were doing it before it was fashionable. Obviously, when Arnold Schwarzenegger was getting very popular, and you mentioned Bruno Sammartino, is he somebody you looked up to as far as wanting to get into the wrestling business?
Oh, absolutely. Bruno, without question, was my sports hero. There was no other sports figure that influenced me as much as Bruno Sammartino.
I think a lot of people don't realize just how powerful Sammartino was, especially the younger fans today. But Bruno arguably was the strongest man in the business during his day, correct?
Well, during that era, certainly Bruno was right up there. And you got to know how the sport of powerlifting transformed throughout those years. It wasn't really organized. The sport of powerlifting didn't become actually organized, I'm going to say, till the late 60s, early 70s, and it grew from there. But today, much like the wrestling business, it's very fractured, and this organization got this champion, that organization got that champion. So what needs to happen in powerlifting is similar to what happened in the world of professional wrestling not too long ago when Vince McMahon Jr. just took it all over.
Now, I had heard a few years ago, and I don't know whether this came to fruition or not, but rumors had circulated that you were trying to start your own powerlifting group. Is that still something going on, or did I miss it, and it happened, or where are we at with that?
Well, we actually started it back in 1999, that's when I was in the casino industry, and we held a contest that actually gave $10,000 to the winner. And as crazy as it may sound, we didn't get any entries from the United States. It was all foreigners.
Really?
But we took it from there, and once they seen that the money was real, we ran it 5 or 6 years, and we just went from there, and then it sort of went by its way.
Okay. What was your thoughts, I guess, when Vince decided to get into the world of lifting with his WBF?
Well, Well, that's, you know, if you look at the history of the NPC, and I'm very close friends with the president of that company, Jim Mannion, who's right up the road from us in Pittsburgh. And he took that company and developed it into what it is today, and it's one of the most influential parts of sports nutrition today. In fact, it's probably a significant company that took sports nutrition and made it is what it is today. Now, Vince, from my understanding, had a great love for bodybuilding. Me, I wasn't so much on the bodybuilding because I was geared more towards the strength athletes.
Right.
But, and you know, hey, look, I don't care what anybody says. Vince McMahon is a marketing genius. And, you know, he took that and seen it wasn't going where he wanted it to go. And much like the powerlifting, you know, he went back to his bread and butter, which has always been the professional wrestling.
A lot of people don't in life don't realize it takes a lot of failures before you get to success. And obviously, the WBF didn't take off. The XFL, he gave that a pretty good run, and it didn't last very long. Obviously, his movies aren't doing such a big deal. But the man knows his wrestling, and no one can ever deny his place in the industry and what he's created.
Well, my understanding is movies are doing pretty good.
No, they've taken off finally. He was losing a lot of money there for a few years.
Well, I haven't followed that close, so I can't say that with any degree of certainty, but I see he's absolutely out there doing what he needs to do. And if what, hey, professional wrestling put him on that road, so you know he did take professional wrestling to different levels.
So how did you become a police officer?
Well, you know, I never had any aspiration to become into law enforcement. And back then, if I wasn't the first person to be hired in the United States at 18 years old, well, I actually just turned 19. And it was a job the steel mills were running real strong back here in the Pittsburgh area. And, you know, I went to work in the steel mill, and I just saw I can't do a career in the steel mill. It just wasn't for me. So I had an uncle that was a cop, and he desperately tried to talk me out of taking that job. And anyway, I took the job, and I loved law enforcement. It's the greatest job in the world. I'd encourage anybody that is looking for a career, certainly to investigate venturing into law enforcement.
So you've always had a love for wrestling, though, or did it kind of catch up with you, I guess, later in your teens, or when did you really start enjoying professional wrestling?
Well, since internet has really put a lot of the terminology out there into the fans' hands, I was the biggest mark in the world growing up with wrestling. And, yeah, I've always enjoyed it. I wrestled in high school it's everything I loved about the sport of wrestling, and that includes professional wrestling.
And I'm sure it didn't hurt that Bruno was from your area as well, right?
Oh, it was a huge plus. And back then, you know, they for the younger fans, they had what was called territories, and
right.
You know, it was very, very hard to get into the business back then. It was very, very guarded, for lack of a better way of explaining it.
But you got into the business with almost very little training at all. Is that correct?
One week crash course. 1 week crash course. I learned to tie up in a headlock, and they threw me into the ring.
So how soon were you actually in the WWF after your crash course?
The 10th day. I come back from Dallas, Texas, and Mike Peduces, who was a friend of the family, and another fellow by the name of Danny Pletchich, they called him Bulldog Pletchich, he called Gorilla Monsoon, and I was booked in the Pittsburgh Civic Arena. And you're 19 years old, you walk into a locker room, and there's all the professional wrestlers, as I told you earlier. I was a mark that I'd grown up with. And, but, you know, I did what Peduces and Pletchers told me. I went in, I sat out, kept my mouth shut, and did what they told me to do.
So during that time in the locker room, I mean, you probably had guys like Superstar Graham and people like that. I guess, what did you learn, or was there any one person you felt like you learned most from, just from a backstage or just a business aspect as a young guy in the locker room? Who was your biggest help, I guess?
Well, I'm going to have to say DiNucci. DiNucci was very, very good to me in my beginning years. Dominic was very, and really the whole conglomerate of guys. Ivan Putski was very good to me in the locker rooms. And I would just sit and watch and I'd listen, you know what I mean? So It was a great group of guys that I was around and, you know, you'd always get, okay, kid, you know, come here, sit down, do this, do that, you know. But it was quite the enjoyable experience.
I just think it's so cool that you actually started off in such a high level, because most people today, I mean, they've got years and years and years of being either in independents or in, you know, the training leagues or whatever for the big federations, but you got to kick in immediately. So that was pretty cool.
I have no idea, to this day, I have no idea why they continued to book me. And they did. And I've said in other interviews, probably the first 7 years of my business was my school. Because that's where I learned, you know. I'd work with the likes of Varun Sakluna, Johnny DeFazio, just a host of people.
So how'd you end up in Georgia?
Put me over once in a while.
How'd you end up in Georgia?
I went down to Georgia. I at the time I had left the police department up here, and I was working as a senior investigator in a nuclear power plant. And I had gotten a promotion, and it went down to Atlanta, and I wound up back down there. And lo and behold, I was an instructor for the side handle baton. It was called the PR-24. And there was no instructors down in the South yet, so they asked me if I'd come into their academies and train their guys and certify them. And I did, and next thing you know, I wound up back in law enforcement. And this is when I first got my first taste of wrestling in the South. And it was pretty much a different animal in the South back then than up in the territories up north.
How so? What was the biggest difference you found?
The characteristics of the fans, they were so enthralled with their professional wrestling that it was amazing. And I don't know if you guys are old enough or have watched the videos on YouTube, but if you look at the old NWA days and the WWF days, you could see the differences in the promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what was exciting about it.
I'm an old fart bully, but the other three guys are still kids on here, so they don't remember those days. I remember it live and in color. I grew up watching Dick the Bruiser and the Crusher on my TV in black and white. So
I got to work with Dick the Bruiser.
Did
and,
you?
And all those, yeah, I sure did. Bulldog Power. I've been very fortunate that I could say I've worked with a lot of the old timers and what fun it was, and you know, just a great learning experience.
Sure. Well, you obviously had Mr. Wrestling too down there in South, but you also tied up with Abdullah the Butcher and Bruiser Brody. What was it like working with those two maniacs?
Well, you know, and I can credit Jerry Blackwell to that. When I got down south, Jerry Blackwell really took me aside and taught me the business. You know, and his style was similar to wrestling too, to Bruiser Brody, Abdullah, very stiff. And for me, that was okay. You know, I was fine with that because of all my law enforcement training and the self-defensive tactics. And then Jerry Blackwell he really taught me a lot. And so when he would bring in Bruiser Brody and these type of guys, well, you know, they would want to work with somebody that was my size, 275, 280, and they know I didn't whine about working stiff. And
right,
so
you were
that,
tough.
Well, I don't know if I was tough, but I didn't mind it. And,
right.
You know, first time I worked Brody, I remember Dick Slater telling me, now, Nick, you better not go in there and mess around and try to do all that. You better go in there and give back to him exactly what he gives to you. And I said, okay. You know, and so, you know, I threw him into a turnbuckle, and I come charging, and I seen that foot coming up, and I didn't slow down. I hit it even. I hit that foot with my face as hard as I could hit it, and we get back in the locker room, and he says, hey, kid, I think you broke my toe. I wanted to say to him, I think you broke my I think you broke my jaw. But what an extreme pleasure it was working with those guys.
I was gonna say that's got to be a great time working with such classic wrestlers like that. I guess what other war stories do you have, or any cool tales of the road during those days, in the territory days? Do you have, or do you remember, that you're allowed to tell on live radio?
Well, down in Georgia, we'd do the trips all over through to the various armories for Georgia Championship, and riding with Wrestling 2 was always something, because if some guys were having some beers or something, he wouldn't pull over. He'd make them hold it, So it was that type of scenario. When I do these interviews about the days in the past, I don't tell stories that's going to purposely harm anybody or things of this nature. They in my interviews, professional wrestling was one of the greatest things I ever did, because A, before I got there, I was a fan. B, when I got there, I respected the fans so much, because they are what makes it happen. So I got nothing but respect for the business and what we call the boys.
Right. I mean, everybody back then absolutely took care of each other, and, it was just a different creature than it is now.
Well, I don't know if that's factual. I mean,
okay.
You certainly have – the business has evolved. Just like it evolved when I started, it went all the way up through, and I don't care what you're doing. Everything is going to evolve.
Sure.
I hear a lot of people talking, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, too, and that's fine. But the guys today, they work so hard. It amazes me how hard they work. And, if I'm critical in any way, I've been known to say, they work harder. I don't know if they work smarter, but when you get up to the WWE level, it's a different animal. It's a completely mm-hmm. different animal. And for those guys to be able to step up to the plate and do what WWE expects of them, hey, that takes a lot. There's a lot to be said for that.
Absolutely. These guys are phenomenal athletes in what they do, and the amount of pain and punishment and not seeing your families and stuff like that. I mean, it's the amount of work time that they have to put in is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
When you got to wrestle a little bit in one of my very favorite promotions of all time, the Global Wrestling Federation. I remember watching that promotion, and I tell you what, the who's who list of people in that federation over the two or three years that it was in operation is enough to rival anybody. What was it like working for that and trying to get that thing off the ground?
Well, Bill Eadie was the executive producer of that, and Joe Tedesino, and we were coming out of Georgia Championship Wrestling. Joe had taken over Georgia when Jerry stepped out of the way, and he had landed this deal with ESPN, and the Bully was just launched, and Bill Eadie and I are still to this day very close friends. And now there's another guy. You want to talk about somebody that's a genius in the business? Well, you got to go something to beat Bill Eadie.
Right.
And so working in that was a lot of fun, and it was very much business, too. We had to do what we had to do, So But when you work with Bill Eadie and you have the guidance of a Bill Eadie, it made it a lot easier.
Did you see the list of talent that has come out of that promotion that didn't last more than a couple of years and seeing where they, you know, where they went? It's just, I mean, Harlem Heat got their start there with, you know, Booker T, and just all the names that have been through there is just so impressive. It boggles my mind that that it didn't last longer than it did, I guess. Where do you think they... Oh, go ahead, please.
One of the things I didn't listen to Bill on was he was forming the tag team of the Bully and Bad News Brown.
Right.
And I should have stayed with Bill and listened to that, because that could have been a very high degree career move. But you know, that was then. This is now. So.
Why do you think the GWF wasn't able to survive it?
Oh, it was finances.
Yeah.
You start talking about producing a federation with TV and everything. It's a considerable amount of money.
Because they got a TV deal pretty quickly.
Very quickly. ESPN was looking for a product. You know, and during that time period was when all that transitioning was going on, when Vince was making the moves with the WWF.
Right. So who came up with the idea of the Bully? Was that something you brought to their attention, or is that something you had assistance in creating the character, or I guess where'd that develop?
The Bully, you know, I realized that I was in my early 30s, and I wasn't getting any younger, and I said to my wife, I says, well, look, you know, if I'm ever going to make it, I'm going to have to do something now. So I knew that, you know, the blonde hair and the flashy outfits, that just didn't fit my persona. And I've said this on other wrestling interviews. I made a list of wrestlers that have my type of physique. Bruno, Dick the Bruiser, Crusher Lazowski, these type of characters. And then in my hometown, the Pittsburgh Steel Mills, you know, there was taverns on every corner, three or four taverns, because these steel mill guys, they like to drink, and I made a list of the guys with their mannerisms and their characteristics, and because of all the various ethnic groups in this area, most of them wore a mustache and wore some type of hat, and they always carried a cigar, so I incorporated that, and then my love for Warner Brothers cartoons, and so I had the character, and it was. And I described the character to Joe Pedicino, and he loved it. And he said, Nick, you just described the Bully. And so Big Bully Busey was created.
That's awesome. I guess something I don't remember, maybe you can enlighten me a little bit, was Downtown Bruno with you in GWF, or was it not until WWF where you guys hooked up?
No, he was not. At the time, Sid Vicious, Iron Sheik, and myself, we were training partners, and boy, some of the greatest workouts I ever had was with Sid and Sheik. And we sort of complimented each other, because Sid was really into the bodybuilding aspect of things. I was into the powerlifting aspect of things. And the Sheik was just a very well-disciplined guy. And if you wanted to work out, Sheik was right there, and we'll do whatever you want to do. So Sid was able to incorporate all the higher rep movements. I promoted, let's move more weight with those higher reps, and then the Sheik was just right there saying, all right, let's go. So with that said, Sheik and Sid were already in the WWF, and I was down at Global, and when Vince made when I got the call from New York, Sid and Downtown Bruno had known each other from Tennessee, and they made that connection up at the WWF then.
Very cool. Hey, Sean, what's the name of those weight things that Sheik likes to work with, Sean? What's that called again?
The Persian clubs.
Yes. Did he make you have to deal with the Persian clubs, Mr. Busick?
The Sheik and I were more than just associates in the business. we would frequent over the Sheik's house. I knew his children. He knew my children. And so, yeah, the answer to that is yes, and I could never do those clubs. I could never do those clubs. I'm telling you, that's going to be one of the hardest exercises I ever tried to do. And if I didn't bust my mouth at least 10 times with those clubs, I didn't do it once. Yeah, and he would try all the time.
And he probably laughed the whole time, didn't he?
Listen, if people really knew the Sheik, I'm telling you, this guy he could have been one of the best coaches to ever step onto a wrestling match. He has such psychology. You know, on New Year's Eve, we'd like be over his house, and his house was in a circle. And at midnight, he'd have 10, 20 neighborhood kids out there, and he'd be running a competition. You'd run around the circle, and he'd give have the kids, okay, who's going to do 10 jumping jacks? And, you know, and the kids who would want to quit, he'd still put them over, raise their hand, but then he'd make sure the guy that did the most and do that. So, yeah, you know, sometimes I think the Sheik gets a bad rap, and sometimes he brings it on himself. But, yeah, the Sheik is a very good person.
Is he as funny in real life as he seems to be?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I can imagine. He's just a riot.
he's really a character. I mean, he really and truly is a character. And the Iron Sheik that you see on TV is not far off from what the real Iron Sheik is.
So when you finally got the call from Vince, I guess, what was your feelings? Were you expecting it, or did it come out of nowhere? Or, I guess, what was your emotions going through when you knew you were going to the show?
It come out of nowhere, and frankly, you know, my wife was just about ready to kill me because we were busted. We were busted. I'm telling you, I went to that meeting with that airline ticket with $5 in my pocket. And,
wow.
And I went, the car picked me up, went right to Vince's house. I'll never forget that. And he showed me his gym, and we sat down and discussed everything. And it just so happens that I had brought a notebook with me to take notes. And I remember Vince liking that, but I was taking notes. And I don't think Patterson really was impressed with me and didn't want to put me under contract right away. And Vince says, no, we're going to put him under contract right now. And that's what they did.
He obviously liked the bully gimmick, right?
Yeah, he loved it. He loved it. And, I bet it was 8 months that I was under contract that I was getting paid, and all I had to do was work out. So, you know, that was sort of just unbelievable to me. But and then I started getting my schedule, and, you know, we did that for a while.
You got to, I guess, hook it up with Steve Lombardi for a while. What was it like working with a ring veteran like Lombardi?
That was at the end. That's when I was leaving, and you know they were building up the credibility of the Brawler a little bit. So you know we went through that little spiel.
So who'd you deal with first, I guess? I'm getting myself mixed up in my...
Well, when I first got
WWF.
There, you know, they put the bully character over, and I had a run-in with Macho Man, and then the rest of my time there was with Superfly, Greg Valentine. I got to work Bret the Hitman in that Intercontinental Championship match. I did a lot of matches with the Bulldog. Who else did I work with? That was pretty... Hacksaw.
You did Kerry Von Erich, too, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked with Kerry at Madison Square Garden, right? And, I was very fortunate. And, there's an article that... And I never revealed this to any other people, but I just revealed it. What I didn't know at the time is I was dealing with a heart condition called AFib, and I was having a lot of trouble in the ring, and I'd always dismiss it. I'd always dismiss it as performance anxiety. But the reality of it is my heart was out of rhythm, and it's a wonder.
Oh, wow.
It's a wonder that I actually didn't die. And I actually did here back in 2004. I was on the treadmill, and I had a sudden-death cardiac arrest. So the threat was real, and I'm playing on, like they say in the casino industry, I'm playing on house money. So
so when did you know you had that, I guess?
Well, when I got my first physical to go to the WWF, they detected it then. And, you know, I had to go get more in-depth tests. And the people, they really didn't know much about AFib back then. And when I went and got the test, it jumped back into rhythm. So it was intermittent when it would jump in and out. But, you know, if you're performing exercise or wrestling, when it trying to wrestle with your heart out of rhythm, it's very dangerous. And there's just, you know, it's a wonder that I'm not one of those guys on the list that have passed away way too young.
Mm-hmm.
Let me put it that way.
So how did you feel, I guess, during matches with somebody who hasn't gone through that? I guess what how did it make you feel in the ring? Were you just tired?
I'd just blow up. I couldn't breathe, you know. And I would have matches where, as long as it was in rhythm, I was fine. But then it would go out of rhythm, and I would just blow up, and I couldn't understand why I was blowing up. And it certainly it affected my job because I wasn't. You know, I wasn't doing what they wanted me to do, but, you know, I didn't even know, though. Back then, I didn't know what was wrong. I couldn't figure out why I was blowing up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it took several years after to find out.
Now, is that something that can be controlled with the right medication and stuff then?
Well, I think it was three, four years ago. I had what was called an ablation surgery. And what they do is they go in, and when I died on that treadmill, thank God they had a defibrillator in the gym, and they got me back. And I actually got up and walked out of the gym. I wouldn't get on the gurney.
Oh, wow.
But they had what's called ablation surgery. And I was on the table for about 8.5 hours. And what they do is they go in and they remap your heart electrically. So, and I'm one of the fortunate ones that it took the first time. So, I've been good ever since by the grace of God.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Wow. I guess we'll backtrack a little bit and get back to your days in the World Wrestling Federation. Were there any? I guess when you were in there, you were in there pretty much at the, you know, the height of Hulkamania, and Savage was just getting started and Hitman was getting going and things like that. Do you remember, I guess, when you were in the ring with young guys before they were hitting their stride and you just knew that this person was going to take off?
I don't know how to answer that one. It was certainly, you know, making it to the big show or the WWF, now WWE, I don't want to say it was overwhelming, but it was more like the production, to be able to see such a production where the trucks come in. And, you know, and I was fortunate because back when I was with the WWF, you know, I remembered those days. I remembered going to the bigger arenas and being out in front of 14, 15,000 people. So I was okay with that, but when I went to the WWF as the Bully, I had seen what it had transformed into, an even bigger animal,
mm-hmm.
with the TV trucks and that type of thing. So I don't know how to exactly answer that, but what I did see and notice is they knew where they wanted the characters to go. And I don't know this to be a fact, and since you're a wrestling nostalgia guy, you might want to check this out, but I would venture to say the Bully may very well have been the last wrestler that came in that was created by the wrestler.
Well, definitely have to check that one out. That is interesting.
Yeah, I don't think you'll
Vince wants to create. Vince wants to create his own people. It's very rare when you get to go in and do your own thing. Ric Flair might have been an exception just because of who he was, but.
Well, Rick was already up there when I was up there.
Oh, that's right. He was, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was.
Well, I have to check that out. That's very interesting. I didn't never even thought of that.
Yeah, because I know Vince wanted to keep the bully character because we had some roundabouts with the attorneys when I left, and nothing drastic, just typical business stuff.
Right.
But I had got the rights to it and controlled it, but the bully was always known for the WWE, and look, I'm just grateful for that,
Sure.
With the likes of the internet and the Facebook, and we started this protein bar company.
Yep.
GNC and everybody wanted that out there, and the bully, with all the wrestlers, the social media has allowed all of us to stay alive.
So were you there when Undertaker got started?
Yes.
Or were you already heading out?
No, Taker was already there.
Taker was already there. I mean, did you see guys like that and say, you know what, this kid got something, I think he's going to be big?
Well, Taker wasn't a kid. Taker was already big when I was there.
Well, right. I mean, a big star is what I meant. I guess their character develops into the international superstar that he ended up becoming. A lot of people, when people were in WCW and saw Terror Rising, who would have ever thought that Triple H would have been born out of that and become what he is today? Or, Damian Stryker would become Edge or whatever. I mean, I didn't know if you saw particular talents and said, you know what, this kid's got something in him. I see something huge in him someday. I don't know if you saw people like that or not.
No, I can't say that I was at the level where I could, where I observed that. I mean, today I do some promoting in the MMA world here locally. And certainly the stuff that I learned throughout the years plays an influence on what I do with the MMA promotion. Again, it goes back to the knowledge and marketing genius of Vince being able to recognize and surrounding himself with people like, back then, Bill Eadie had already left, but, the creation of Demolition.
Right.
How the Sheik come along. Hey, you think back to the Sheik and the Sergeant Slaughter matches.
Mm-hmm.
Those were high dollar money making matches.
And that was right during that, the Iran-Contra problems and stuff like that. So
Vince
always knew when to bring somebody in and how to push the buttons of the, of the fans. And Iraq came into the equation, all of a sudden, you've got Sergeant turning into a turncoat and. There was the Sheik again, and he knew how to play his button.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what'd you think, we talked about Bill Eadie, but when Barry Darso was in WCW, he became a blacktop bully. And obviously now we've got the TNA World Champion as Bully Ray. I mean, does that flatter you when you see other bullies coming out, or does it irritate you, I guess?
Well... what's the saying? Imitation is the best form of flattery.
Right.
For me to raise hell about that, it's nonsense. First of all, why am I going to try to do something to mess with another guy's income? I know we did send a letter down when the Black Belt Bully come out because we had the rights to it. Ever since then, I'm not going to mess with it. I mean, the fact of the matter is the first bully in professional wrestling was Big Bully Busick. And nobody could take that away. Nobody could take that away. So, and in a short period of time that I was there, the bully made a great impact. The character was a great character. I wanted the character to be cartoonish. Vince wanted what you seen in the way he described it to me, I later compared to what he did with Stone Cold, the personality of Stone Cold.
Right.
And, but I was never able to get that persona. If it would have stayed cartoonish, I'd have had a blast with it. I mean, if
you
watch the global page.
My favorite part of the...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, go right ahead, please.
If you watch the global tapes, the way the bully worked, and you watch WWF tapes, you could see the difference in what was happening.
Right.
So.
I tell you, my favorite part of the bully, and I, like I said, I grew up watching wrestling in the very early 70s, and one of my very favorite villains of all time was the Great Ox Baker.
Yep.
Did you get the bully blaster from him? Is that where that came from, or was that just something you picked up on your own?
No, I like Stan Stasiak.
Stan Stasiak. Yes.
Yeah. So that's where I got that from.
Gotcha. Cool. I always loved the heart punch. That always was one of my favorites. I guess before we let you go, Bully, if you would be kind enough, I guess what's your take on the current scene? I mean, do you like still watching WWE? Do you enjoy TNA, or you even get into Ring of Honor? Or I guess what's your take on the current scene?
Well, you know, I do catch the WWE programming every once in a while. I don't see TNA that much, but you see a full transformation going here. You know, you have the independent circuits coming back up.
Right.
You have a lot of independent shows going on right now, and I think that's a good thing. I mentioned earlier in our talks where the business was very guarded when I came through. If I was going to be critical of anything, I think some guys are in the business that shouldn't be in the business. They and the odd thing is that they do so many fantastic things in the ring. I don't see any gym time. I don't see, you know, the fan. A wrestler has an image, and you can be big, but how do you equate a 170-pound guy going in and kicking the shit out of a 280-pound guy?
Right.
Doesn't make sense. So if I'm going to be critical in any way or shape or form, I'd like to see the guys on the independent circuit that are 170 pounds get their butts in the gym, and let's at least get up to 210, 215. So that's my only criticism I have of the independent circuit.
Are you a fan, Mr. Busick, then, of cruiserweight divisions and things like that? Do you think if they're going to be a smaller wrestler, they shouldn't be? Just for logical and rational thinking, you can't see the Big Show seriously getting beat up by Rey Mysterio Jr. That's just not logical. Do you think if you're going to be a small wrestler, you need to either be in a promotion that deals with small wrestlers or be in a division that has that?
Well, when you're TNA or you're the WWE, you have the capabilities of doing some, like Rey Mysterio could do something to the Big Show in the WWE because they could create the angle properly. But
right.
Like you said, it's the logic of it. But you go to a house show and you get a guy that's 170 pounds going against a 300-pound guy in an indie show, what's that do to the business? It hurts the business. So there's a big difference between what the TNA and the WWE does versus an independent show going in with you know, 50 to 100 people. We got to respect the business in some fashion. You know what I mean?
Right. Excuse me just a second, Mr. Busick. Area code 917, who am I talking to?
When are we having our bro off?
Aha. What's going on? Did you have a question for Big Bully tonight, John?
I actually wanted to just listen in.
Okay. We'll let you do that.
See how your guys are flowing.
Well, John, we're glad you called in there, buddy.
Thank you.
Mr. Busick, a lot of people aren't aware that you're still out there. I mean, you're in the Weirton, West Virginia area. Isn't Five Star Wrestling's over in that area, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah. We're right outside of Pittsburgh.
Right. So tell us a little bit what's going on there. You can still be found in those rings as well, can't you?
Yeah, you know, Five Star Wrestling is an independent show that's going in the tri-state area here, and
fact, I did my final retirement match with them against Joseph von Schmidt. And there's a guy who's look for him in the future to be all over the place, because what a great talent he is. And I did my retirement match right here in my hometown, and one of the key reasons I did it is my youngest son never seen me in the ring. He's 22 years old, and he's coming up for a title fight here next Saturday in the MMA world. And so I got to do my final retirement match, and boy, that is it. I am done. But yeah, you can look to Five Star Wrestling to be in the area here real strong.
Excellent. What else do you have going on before we let you go? Anything you want to pop or promote for yourself?
Well, yeah, if they're into protein bars, certainly go to our website, BigBullyNutrition.com. And check out our protein bars. I didn't mess around. I loaded it up. It's one of the great tasting bars, and you just won't find it. There's no another protein bar on the market that'll compare to it if you're looking for dosages. So check that out. And other than that, that's about it, guys. And I appreciate you taking the time to put me on here. And who else is on the line? Why were they so talkative? I mean, I couldn't get a word in edgewise.
You know, the funny thing is we've had some interviews before, and they just, for some reason, they're just not as radio interviewing type. They love to listen and hear what the wrestlers have to say, but they just don't jump in there like they need some more seasoning. I've got to train them some more, Bully. They need more seasoning, so I need the Sheik to come and help me.
That's it. Well, listen, thanks for having me, guys. Now, I wish you all the best, and you guys take care.
Thank you. Big Bully Busick, everyone. What a classy individual and an awesome guest that we had tonight. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys. Take care, everybody.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
JCD, how are you, buddy?
Good. What's going on, man?
Just got done talking, obviously, to Big Bully Busick. Outstanding interview. What'd you guys think?
He was a great interview. He was a great guy to interview. So
wasn't
polite.
He's from your area, too, right? He wrestled down in your area, in the Georgia area, right, Mojo?
Yes, he did.
Yes. All right, guys. Interview time is over, so it is now time for the think tank. Before we start think tank, I need to do some propping first. We discussed that we are brought live by Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network. They can be found at www.blogtalkradio.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. They can also be found at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. They've got their own website even, www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. And if you're like Bully Ray says on the old Twitter, well, Tweeter or whatever he calls it, they're at PW Powerhouse. Also, you can find us, by us I mean Pro Wrestling Obsession. We have our own page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Obsession. Okay, now we're ready for the think tank. And for those who are unaware of the think tank, it is a topic that we come up with that takes a little bit of thinking and involvement to it and trying to come up with logical answers of what we think should happen in a scenario or what have you. I'll start off with the actual topic. I'll give you guys a few seconds to give it some thought, and then I'm going to call on you. So today's think tank, let's think of skits or gimmicks or angles or what have you that you feel destroyed someone's career and they were never able to recover from it. So give that some thought here for a couple seconds. Skits, angles, gimmicks, what have you, that destroyed a career and that the particular wrestler was never able to come back from it because it was so heinous.
I got one.
Okay. I'm going to go with the Bowmeister, Bo Johnson. What do you got, buddy?
Well, I hope I didn't steal everyone else's idea here. But I'm going to have to go with the Shockmaster.
Yeah.
Intro. That's the first thing that popped in my head. Would have been better if he didn't stumble? Maybe, but it is what it is, and it kind of just ruined the rest of his career in WCW.
You know, well, that's a very good one. John and I had the fortune of talking to Fred Ottman, who talked at great length about the Shockmaster gimmick and how that went over and how it really, you know, he wasn't too thrilled with how things were presented, but you know what, his look was always, you know, I'm gonna do whatever they want me to do and do it to the best of my abilities, and things happen sometimes. That was a good interview too, JCD, was it not?
It was interesting. You know, it definitely, you know, was interesting, and it shed a light on a few things, so.
Yep. All right, JCD, you're up next. What do you think with our Think Tank topic tonight?
Gimmick that killed the guy, and he was never able to come back from.
Just completely devastated a career.
Still going on this, because I want to go at one, but I don't want to.
All right, think about it. Let me go to somebody else, JC.
Yeah,
you keep thinking.
Yeah, go to someone
okay?
else and come back tonight.
All right, let's go to Mojo.
I don't know if anybody else saw this one, but I'm sitting here thinking Jeff Jarrett.
Jeff Jarrett? Well, how do you say that? What prompts that? What ruined his career?
Two words. Karen Angle.
Amen. I'll completely disagree with that.
So why do you feel Karen Angle has ruined Jeff Jarrett and he will not be able to recover from her?
Simply because I think when I was watching TNA, I think the one thing that made me wonder why Jarrett was taken off TV for so long and then came back out of the blue, I think the thing that threw me off was when Dixie said, you know, you slept with Kurt Angle's wife. And I was like, whoa, what? Like, they had an affair, and it was just, I felt kind of awkward watching TNA after that. But then, you know, he had a good push after a while, but now you don't see him on TV at all. You don't see Karen. No one knows what happened, if he got fired or anything. So I think that was his downfall, you know, sleeping with a new signing's wife, big no-no.
Yeah, but I still think him not being on there is by choice. I don't think it's by, you know, anybody intentionally not happy with his character or happy with him. I mean, as long as TNA is in existence, I think Jeff Jarrett's got a job. What are you thinking, John?
He was not taken off TV because of Karen Jarrett. In fact, they actually made a boatload of money on that. Because they were able to run that series of matches with him and Kurt because of it. The reason why he's off TV is because he went to go do that Ring Ka Ka in India, and he's just kind of actually been one of those rare guys that has realized his time is up, and he's not really big on being on air anymore. Has
and plus,
to do
he was doing AAA in Mexico too, John, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, you know, it has nothing to do with Karen, and they actually made money off that, because they ran about two or three series of matches with him and Angle based off that. The guy I'm thinking of, Matt Hardy.
Okay.
He's kind of the same thing with Jarrett after the whole Edge thing with Lita, where you thought that was just going to be gold and that was going to launch him off. That did the complete opposite. That match at SummerSlam killed him. It's the reason why he was never a serious main eventer.
Sean Blitz Forrester, what do you have for me?
Well, for me, I never took Matt Hardy seriously as a main eventer long before then, because compared to Jeff, Matt was a little boring. Except
true.
The version 1.0. The attitude. That could have worked.
Hey, Blitz, well, let's stop Matt Hardy. Well, who's your choice?
Who do you think
has had their career ruined by an Angle or a? I guess Mojo took me seriously when I said an Angle. She picked Karen Angle, huh? But Blitz, whose career was destroyed?
I'm
in your opinion,
go with the whole narcissism gimmick.
You think Lex Luger was ruined by it?
Lex Luger, but that's not my pick.
Okay.
Mark Jindrak. Art Jindrak, The Reflection of Perfection.
Aha. So completely destroyed his career. I think Mojo might disagree with you with the way he's in Mexico, right, Mojo?
Oh, he's that's one of those things with where I want to say WWE missed the ball because the perfection thing. I think if he was booked right, in a sense, he would have been a big star. But, you know, when WWE released him, he pretty much was like, I can make my money elsewhere. Now, look, about almost 10 years later, this guy's in Mexico main eventing for
CMLL. Right, so I don't think he's not destroyed. Maybe he is in the U.S., but he's definitely not destroyed. All right, we're running out of time for Think Tank, guys. Let me give you guys mine.
All right.
Does anybody remember Rocco?
Oh.
Public Enemy
destroyed
Rocco?
Destroyed the Legion of Doom Road Warriors. They were never the same after Rocco the Puppet.
Oh.
Are we in agreement that they were destroyed after that?
Yes.
Yeah, it was
Hawk left the WWF because Rocco, you know, ruined their credibility and they weren't being taken seriously as wrestlers anymore. It completely destroyed the aura of the Legion of Doom. Your thoughts
good
on
one.
That, people? Bo,
that's
what are you thinking
one.
About
I remember that.
That.
I remember that. The only thing I remember Rocky from is the SummerSlam in was it 92 that they were in Brittany? Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the only time I remember the puppets.
See, Rocco had a bad domino effect on LOD, and I'll tell you why. Because they left abruptly in 92 because of it. And then the problem was when they came back in 97, it was such a distrust with Vince that they almost were going like on a per-date basis. They never had an actual deal in place for a year or 2 years. That's why when they were doing house shows, especially towards October, early November pre-Survivor Series, when they had the tag belts, they were doing false finishes on the house shows. They had cameras there just in case when it came time to do the live Raw on Monday night, LOD didn't want to show up. They had footage of them dropping the belts. It was because of that they never wanted to stick with Vince long-term because they didn't trust him, and that's why their runs after that were so short, abrupt, and ended out of nowhere.
And then the Hawk suicidal drug thing Rocco already sent it into a tailspin. That finished it off pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, it's time to move on. Thank you for Think Tank, guys. You guys were awesome.
Rick,
it's now time
to drop off.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I'm heading over. Yep. I got bottles in my hand and formula in the other hand. So
gotcha.
I understand, buddy.
Check
out your show. I just wanted to check out your show, support you, and you know, come on and you know, wish you luck with it, and maybe on another couple of Friday nights I can do a full show with you.
Oh, we'd love to have you, man. JCD, John Demaselli.
And I didn't forget, dude. I gotta get that music for you. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and do it.
You're a busy boy. I understand. We'll catch up with you soon, okay?
Sounds good, brother.
See you, man.
All right, bye.
Later. All right, guys. Thank you to JCD, John Demaselli. He's on Oh, You Didn't Know Radio, one of the co-hosts with that. We always had a good rapport with each other, and I enjoy when we get to talk wrestling. Guys, it's time for WWE Talk. Who wants to get us started on our weekly talk of WWE programming? Mojo, what do we want to talk about with World Wrestling Entertainment this week?
Who was it? AJ's match with Natalya, I believe that's who it was.
Whose match,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry?
AJ versus Natalya.
AJ, okay.
That match. Have y'all seen a female ever complete the octopus stretch as amazing as AJ did it?
I'm scratching my head on if it happened or not.
I
don't think that's really
or seen a female pull off the octopus stretch. At least in my viewing.
I'm just amazed when I see the divas do a wrestling move, period, but continue.
I believe Gail Kim used to do it when she was in WWE, but it wasn't as, I guess you can say, fierce-looking compared to AJ's on Natalya's.
You know what? I'll be honest with you, Ashley. Now that I've dumped DirecTV and I'm now streaming Hulu, I have to watch it the next day, so I don't get to see anything live anymore. They condense my wrestling, and we'll get to this here in a second, Blitz Forrester. They condense my wrestling from a 3-hour show to a 1.5-hour show. I did not get to see AJ versus Natalya, nor, Blitz Forrester, did I get to see the Randy Orton versus Antonio Cesaro match. So what did I miss?
Well, you missed a pretty damn good match. And I do want to take this moment to complain, if I may, about WWE on Hulu Plus cutting out matches. Cesaro's matches have been cut on a pretty regular basis, and that doesn't sit well with me.
So he's been cut more than once then, and I've just not known. I just thought he wasn't being used, and he's just been flat-out cut?
He's been flat-out cut from Hulu Plus multiple times. Of course, when he does show up, if he's not squashing Zack Ryder, he's looking up at the stars for 3.
So I guess my question, you know, that I wanted to propose, I guess, in our WWE talk was, who determines, obviously they got to crunch 3 hours into an hour and a half. You would think that most of it is backstage stuff, because I hardly ever see anything backstage anymore. You know, how do they decide what matches get the axe? Now, you would think the best matches would be the ones that they would keep, or something that makes sense to an angle that they're promoting for a pay-per-view, obviously. So, you know, what else got cut that I missed that was fabulous? Because, you know what, Raws are okay, but I'm not seeing any just awesome matches anymore.
Let's see. Bo? From this week's Raw and Hulu Plus, the Primetime Players versus Tons of Funk got cut.
Okay.
Kofi Kingston versus Damian Sandow got cut.
Now I'm really mad. Not only are we losing Cesaro, but now we're losing the intellectual savior of the unwashed masses. This is just, we must protest.
The two matches we just discussed, Cesaro Orton and Natalya versus AJ, and Miz versus Heath Slater. You didn't miss much.
Okay, I would say I didn't miss much probably with that one. It just makes you wonder,
well,
I guess, when you think about what the decision-making goes into which matches to take out. I mean, I can understand why the Funkadelics and Tons of Funk and Prime Time was cut out, because they don't have a program going anywhere. The Miz doesn't have a program going anywhere with Heath Slater. But you know what? Somebody like Cesaro and Orton. I mean, Randy Orton gets cut. All right.
It's all about the Cena.
Yeah. What else do we want to talk about with the World Wrestling Entertainment? Bo, what do you got?
Should we touch bases on the recent releases that we had? Just happened.
You know
today?
What? That would be a very good thing, because I just watched NXT the other night and watched Briley and Sakamoto taking on Conor O'Brien. Now I find out the next day they're gone. So tell us about this, Bo.
Well, I guess it's spring cleaning time, and 7 NXT names have been released.
And what are the names? Do we have them?
I just pulled them up.
Audra Marie was one, right?
Anya, however you pronounce her name, the other diva to be released.
Briley Pierce was gone. Sakamoto's gone.
Derek Bateman.
Derek Bateman's gone, right?
Percy Watson.
Watson's gone, okay.
And Brandon Draven.
Okay. So what do you think's going on? Why are they releasing these talent? Are they making room for the Sammy Callahans of the world? Rumor has it Sammy Callahan's now under WWE contract.
With the new performance center they're opening, and possibly moving developmental operations there, I think they'd have room for more development. It's possible that WWE wants to streamline developmental, even though they're not doing it with the main roster, which is where the releases need to be made.
Yeah, because surprisingly, a name like Curt Hawkins is supposed to be on NXT next week. You know, you would think Curt Hawkins has had his opportunities. You know, why isn't he getting the cut, I guess, over somebody who, I mean, I haven't seen enough of Ziggler's brother enough to make a judgment on him, but, you know, he obviously hasn't had his opportunities. Curt Hawkins has been in the big time and has, you know, sputtered his wheels. Why isn't he the one going out the door and giving Ziggler's brother more of an opportunity to prove himself? So, what's your thoughts on that, guys? Do you think getting rid of the young talents makes more sense, or some of these veterans of the ring that have had their chance, I guess, whether you think it's a good enough of a chance or not, but are still on WWE's contract and not really on NXT's level, should they be gone instead?
JTG, yes.
Yeah, he's another one. He's another one. Trent Beretta. You know, some of these names.
Beretta's gone.
Oh, is he gone finally?
Yeah,
okay.
They let him go.
He's the best of Super Juniors.
Okay. Well, we know what I'm talking about, some of those type of names. So what's your thoughts? Should they be getting rid of those kind of guys, Blitz?
Yeah.
Instead of the Briley Pierces of the Sakamotos of the world?
I called Sakamoto being gone after Tensai dropped the whole Japanese gimmick.
Right.
I called Sakamoto being gone.
But should he be gone? I mean, he went to NXT, and obviously they were trying to repackage him and make him as a wrestler more than just a lackey for Tensai.
No, I think they should. I mean, WWE has gained a slight market in Japan with them coming in yearly, and to be quite honest, it's very hard to take Yoshitatsu seriously as even a credible competitor when, even, like you said, he goes on NXT and gets squashed.
Right. That brings me up to another point. Bomeister, when I see a Yoshitatsu get clobbered by a Bray Wyatt, or I see Justin Gabriel two times in a row being beaten by a Leo Kruger on NXT television, that makes you wonder why Justin Gabriel is the WWE star and not Leo Kruger. Why is Yoshitatsu the star and not Bray Wyatt? These kind of guys, I mean, do you feel, Bo, that that's the kind of guys who need to go if they can't even win on NXT against the NXT talent?
I find it really strange who WWE brings up and who they don't. I mean, they did try Bray Wyatt at one point, you know, under a completely different gimmick, and well, it worked for...
I think it was just dark matches, though, really, wasn't it, though?
Yeah.
Harris, anyway. When they brought him up as Husky Harris.
Right.
He worked for a smidge, but then, you know, something, you know, they didn't like his, you know, his look or something, or whatever, or the Nexus just fizzled out and he went back down to NXT. And so, I mean, yeah, some guys like Tatsu, like Tatsu and like Hawkins and all those, some who are not getting that time on TV or even in the ring, period, some days. I don't
if
see how.
If they're going to get squashed, why not bring up an NXT kid to get squashed and get him some exposure? Is that what you're thinking, Bo?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Phone number, everybody, 760-888-5749. This is Pro Wrestling Obsession Live. We're talking to the Blitz. We're talking to the Bowmeister. We're talking to Miss Mojo. If you'd like to join us, by all means, call in. You're more than welcome to join any segment with us and talk some wrestling with us. Just a couple more minutes on WWE talk. Mojo, what else?
Let's see. Who do you guys with the, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the up-to-date card for Extreme Rules, but Triple H, Brock Lesnar, steel cage match. Who do you guys, what are your picks for that match? Who do you think is going to win?
Quickly, Blitz.
Lesnar. He's
why?
If they're going to build him for a big match next year, he needs to win now. Put this thing with Triple H aside. Triple H has nothing to gain from winning. Nothing.
Bowmeister.
I'm going to have to go with Lesnar, too. If they're going to keep him as a viable threat, he's going to have to go over here.
Mojo.
Lesnar, because Triple H won the last time. I love Triple H, but like Blitz said, if they're trying to make Lesnar a big guy for next year, he definitely needs to go over. And steel cage is kind of like his turf, you know, because of the whole UFC background experience. So I definitely think he should win this one.
Profit. I agree with all of you. I mean, Brock Lesnar just signed a new contract with WWE. You know, he's not a one-off type performer like he was signed to, I guess, kind of in his original deal. He's got more dates this time around. You're right. If he's going to be a big name and somebody we're going to take seriously as a threat, you know, beating up an office is one thing. Beating Triple H is another. If he doesn't beat Triple H this time, I mean, good grief, how many big matches has he lost now on pay-per-views? I mean, he would have lost twice to Triple H, lost to Cena. I mean, what is that, 1-3? You're right, he's got to win a big match. What else? Very quickly, anything else? Any other rumors we're hearing? You've got about 40 seconds left in this segment. Anything you want to grumble about, Blitz?
I'm saving my grumbles.
Any other complaining 30 seconds left of WWE talk with anything you that irks you? We've got some more matches, I guess. I got to see a pretty decent match, Big E Langston versus Damian Sandow on NXT. That was a pretty good match. I guess we got Sandow going for U.S. title. No, it's Dean Ambrose going for the U.S. title, right?
Yes, it is.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up with WWE, so obviously we're struggling for topics. It's time to move on. It's time for our very favorite segment of our entire Pro Wrestling Obsession Live edition, and that is Get Blitzed, where our own PWO World Trivia Champion of the World will be defending his belt once again. Does anybody have the stones to get in the ring with Blitz Forrester and at least give him a match? We've had a couple steamrolls so far. We do have a challenger. His name is James Henson. My question is he full of smoke and hot air, or is he actually going to have the balls to call in? My personal prediction is he's not going to call in. So, James Henson, if you're out there, you said you were going to take this challenge with Blitz Forrester. I fully expect a phone call here within the next 30 seconds. Well, we're going to have to move on to somebody who's legitimate. Blitz, what do you have to say to your competition out there while we're waiting Mr. Henson to not call in?
Bring it on. I am a champion, and I will remain champion.
And you know what? I'm not going to disagree whatsoever with Blitz. He's been incredibly impressive. I mean, good grief, we've had 20 questions so far. The Blitz has gotten, I think, 16 right.
14.
No, I thought you had 16 right, two where the other person got, and then two more where neither one of you got an answer. So either way, it's just an impressive performance and display of wrestling trivia power by the Blitz. He's putting his Blitz bomb on people. James Henson isn't calling, guys. Do you know what that means? It's time for a triple threat match with the PWO Wrestling Trivia Champion Blitz Forrester going up against his challengers, my personal hero, Miss Mojo, Ashley Farmer, and also, who's unaware he's going to be wrestling tonight, the Bo Meister himself.
I was wondering when I got wrapped up in this.
Well, you did get wrapped up in this because it's time for 10 trivia questions. Are we ready?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, yes.
Blitz, obviously, like you have in your other defenses, just say Blitz if you know the answer. Mojo, if you would just say Mojo when you know the answer. Bo Meister's too long, so just say Bo. Fair enough?
All right. Fair enough.
Hang on. Whoa. Hang on. I've got the phone ringing here, guys. Hang on. Area code 661. Who am I speaking to?
Hey, it's Robbie from PWR.
Who is that? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Robbie from PWR.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's going good. I thought James couldn't take the Blitz on a bar. I might as well have it there.
So are you taking his place and wanting to challenge Blitz?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, esteemed panel. We're going to have to hold the triple threat off for another time, because we have a challenger here who wants to take on the mighty Blitz. So what are you going to say if you know the answer, sir?
Bones. I don't know anything, my name.
You're just going to say Bones?
Yeah, whatever.
That's fine. All right, let's get started, Blitz. Any trash talking you want to give to Mr. Bones here before we get started?
Yes. It looks like it's time for the Blitz to break some bones.
Bones, anything you want to shoot off towards the champion before you get started?
Yeah, just good luck.
All right, let's rock and roll then. All right, so Bones, Blitz. Question number one. When Ric Flair was WCW commissioner, he stripped which wrestler of the United States title for no reason at all and handed it over to his son, David Flair?
That's
a couple more seconds, guys. 5 seconds.
Blitz. It was Scott Steiner.
Correct. Scott Steiner is correct. 1-0 for the Blitz. Question number two. With whom did Rick Martel form a tag team known as the Supermodels in 1995 in an attempt to get back in the WWF?
Blitz. Was it Don Callis?
2-0, Blitz is in the lead. All right, Bones, you're letting him get an early lead on you. Let's come back here. You ready?
Okay, sir.
Stretch those arms out. Here we go. Question number three. What was Tori Wilson's on-screen name when she first appeared on WCW TV in 1999?
Oh, I know this one.
No, Mojo.
Bones.
Blitz.
Samantha.
Samantha is correct. 2-1, Blitz. Sorry, he beat you to it. Very good, Bones. Very good. Now we got a match. What two wrestlers purchased the Amarillo office from the Funk Brothers in 1978.
Blitz.
5 seconds, guys. What two wrestlers purchased Blitz?
Was it the Briscoe brothers?
That's not correct. Bones, you have a shot. If you would like to take it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass.
Okay, the actual correct answer is Dick Murdoch and Blackjack Mulligan. Score remains 2 for the Blitz, 1 for Bones. What wrestler has won the TNA X Division title under 2 different names or gimmicks?
Bones.
Bones.
Is it Christopher Daniels?
That's not correct, sir. Blitz, you have a free shot.
Austin Aries?
No. The actual answer is Low Key, Cinchy.
Oh.
Remains 2-1. Next question. Who did John Cena defeat for his very first championship in the WWE?
Could you repeat that?
Yes.
Blitz.
Who did John Cena, hang on, Blitz. Who did John Cena defeat for his first championship in the WWE?
Bones.
Bones.
Big Show.
That is correct. We have a tie game. 2-2. 4 questions left. Blitz, you shaking off those cobwebs a little bit?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Bones, you ready? Here we go. 2-2. For much of 1987, Bobby Heenan sported a neck brace to sell an angle. Who was responsible for breaking Heenan's neck?
Blitz. Andre the Giant.
Incorrect. Bones, you have a free shot at him.
Could you repeat the year?
1987.
King Kong Bundy?
That's not correct either. It was actually Ken Patera. Ken Patera. 3 questions left. We have a 2-2 deadlock here, people. When Jim Cornette decided to quit WCW, he jokingly sent out a wreath later in the year to show his condolences for whom?
Blitz.
Worcester.
Jim Herd.
That is correct. Jim Herd, because Jim Cornette said his promotion was going to die. 3-2, 2 questions left, which means, Bones, you need to get both of these right, sir, to take the title. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The night after the infamous screw job in Montreal, someone else actually walked out on the WWF and no-showed the TV taping. Who was it?
Was it Rick Rude?
Bones, did you call your name?
Was it Rick Rude?
That's not correct. Blitz Forrester.
It was British Bulldog.
That's not correct either. The answer is Mick Foley. Mick Foley walked out and obviously re-signed and went to bigger and better things after that happened. Last question. Bones, at least let's get a tie and a draw here so we can bring you back next week to get a rematch. All right?
Yeah.
All right, dude. Here we go. What was Eddie Guerrero's name when he wrestled in Japan?
Blitz. Black Tiger 2.
Black Tiger is correct.
Oh.
Game is over, 4-2. Blitz Forrester is still the defending champion, but Bones, daggone it, you made a nice run at him. We will definitely, I would like to see you get a rematch with him at some point. Are you up to it here in the next few weeks?
Yeah, I'm up for it.
All right, dude. I appreciate you coming on tonight. Thank you so much. 4-2. Blitz Forrester has a little bit of a challenge here this night. Thank you, Bones.
All right, cheers.
All right, Bones gave you a run tonight, Blitz.
Oh yeah.
Questions a little tougher for you, or you know what happened tonight?
Those were definitely some tricky questions.
Okay. Well, sorry to disappoint Ashley and Bo. I think you're both starting to chomp at the bit there, getting ready to get in the ring with Blitz, huh? Bo Meister?
You could say that.
I know Mojo is ready to go. Bo, do you even want to be in the ring with Blitz Forrester, or were you dreading it when I announced your name to get in the ring in a triple threat?
At some point, don't spring it on me, you know, 30 seconds before we're supposed to.
Well, that's how it's always going to be, because, guys, this is what happens. If we don't have a challenger for Blitz Forrester, I have to go to the panel. So you guys have to always be on guard at all times, because when Blitz Forrester does not have a challenger that is calling in to take him on, it's automatically going to be a triple threat match with Miss Mojo, my hero, and the Bowmeister, Bo Johnson, against the defending pro wrestling obsession, wrestling trivia world champion of the world, Sean the Blitz Forrester. But nonetheless, regardless that the questions were a little more difficult this week, Sean the Blitz Forrester is still the defending champion. And until somebody takes him down, you know, nobody has any room to talk anything negative about the Blitz and his performances. All right, guys. We've got about a couple minutes here before we start the next segment. Ashley, I'm giving you 1 minute and 30 seconds on the clock to talk about what's going on in Mexico for some international wrestling. Go for it.
All right, first things first, CMLL is doing its annual En Busca de un Ídolo. That's pretty much In Search for the Next Idol. There's not a lot of background to it, unfortunately, but it seems like it's going to be a lot of mid-carders that competed in last year that will be in this one as well. Also, from AAA, it will be the main event for Puebla. It will be Electroshock, Blue Demon, and Macias versus El Consejo, which consists of Silver King, Mascaro Año 2000 Jr., and Texano Jr. Last time Blue Demon and Macias teamed up, they actually had some problems because of La Parca, L.A. Park is what I should say, and Texano Jr. doing the whole Dirty Eddie Guerrero tricks. So this should be interesting.
Very nice. Very nice. You still got 30 seconds.
Huh.
What else you got, Ashley? Anything else in Mexico that's of relevance that we need to be knowing about? Who's our champions that we need to know?
Okay. Well, for AAA, it's Texano. The tag team champions, I do believe, are... I think they had another title change. But the Trios champions are still Los Psycho Circus, if I remember correctly. The Cruiserweight champion is Daga.
Very nice.
So,
time is now up, and you did a wonderful job, Ashley. Hopefully next week, next time you're on, we'd love to have you on every week. Obviously, you're in the military, and that won't happen every week, but we'll try to get you as many minutes as we can. Next time, Ashley, we'll be talking about Japan and what's going on in the scene in Japan. So, it's time to move on, people. It's time to talk TNA wrestling. Bo Johnson, where are we going to start with TNA wrestling?
Why not go with the big news? Well, can't really call it news, but the big incident that happened with Aries and Hemi.
All right, let's go. Let's talk about it. So what's your feelings on it? Obviously, we'll get the people up to speed. Henny announced as Austin Aries and Bobby Roode were coming down the aisle. She announced them as Kazarian and Daniels, Bad Influence. So when Aries got into the ring, Christy Hemme happened to be over at one of the turnbuckles. Austin did his routine stand up on the turnbuckle, and his crotch just so happened to be close to the face area of Christy Hemme. Has it been blown out of proportion, Bo? Do we have legitimate reason to think this was distasteful? What's your thoughts, Bo Meister?
I think it was slightly distasteful. I mean, she could have moved, yet at the same time, Aries did choose to go into that particular corner. But other than that, it's been really been blown out of proportion. You know, I mean, yeah, Christy or Henny did say on Twitter that, yeah, it was a bit of an issue for her. And Aries' little comment about that. And then I don't know who blew that pretty much up into, you know, gigantic balloon it was. But it, you know, I guess Aries had to be made the example in this situation here.
Blitz Forrester, what's your take on it?
It was Mark Madden who blew it out of even higher out of proportion. And I have to agree that Aries could have gone to another turnbuckle or Hemi could have moved. But my main gripe is with TNA management and the fans. Management should have put out a statement long before TNA, long before Spike TV that had something to say about it, and long before the fans got a chance to blow it out of proportion.
So you think you think it was handled poorly by TNA?
Exactly.
Okay.
And the fans, some of the fans made me sick. Okay, I can understand defending Aries, saying it wasn't that bad. I can understand that. But there were a bunch of fans that basically said that Hemi put herself in that position. She deserved it kind of mentality. And that just does not sit well with me at all.
My quick question before I move on to this, and I'm not as well versed in this topic as what happened because I still have yet to watch the show. No, I saw the show. I'm sorry. I did see that show. Was this part of an angle or did she legitimately screw it up? Or was it? Or did she intentionally screw it up? And that was supposed to be part of the show. So this was, I guess, what's the answer to that?
From all reports, it doesn't look like it was planned.
All right. So she legitimately messed up the entrance, and
right.
Aries decided to take it a little further with it and try to make her look bad for not announcing their names correctly. And that's how it went.
Right.
Okay.
Mojo
is the only female on this panel. What's your take?
I think it got blew out of proportion, but at the same time, like Bo said, it was kind of disrespectful in a way. I think Christy Hemme could have moved out of the way if it was such a big deal, you know. To her, the thing that kind of blows me is why would she tweet about it on Twitter, you know? After the match, she could have went to Aries and should have been like, oh, you know, I didn't feel comfortable with you doing that. But instead of doing that, she took it to Twitter, which made it even more of a big deal. So in a sense, her and the guy that worked at Spike TV kind of made it even more big of a deal. What it could have been settled with her going to Aries face-to-face and telling him.
This is where my confusion with this sets in. You know, when I watched it, yeah, I can see where it can be a little inappropriate. You guys are right. Hemi could have moved. I didn't see Aries gyrate or thrust or anything of the sort. Yes, he could have picked a different turnbuckle, but I thought it got blown out of proportion. Now, Bo Meister, you made a comment saying what Christy Hemme said on Twitter. This is going completely against reports that I've read where Hemme said she was completely all right with it, and they laughed about it later in the locker room areas or backstage areas or what have you, and that it wasn't a big deal, which is now making me think, with what you said, Bo, and her going to Twitter, and Ashley, now are they trying to run with this and make it a big deal so they can keep getting some pub out of this?
I think
this is professional wrestling. Bo Meister.
Well, now that the situation's happened, yeah, they're probably going to run with it.
Hemi's completely backtracking, right?
From what I saw, she replied to some comment or that, you know, someone had tweeted her, and she said something along the lines like, yeah, it was rude or disrespectful or something like that. Something kind of like off the cuff.
Was she playing in character?
That she might have been playing a little bit in character, to be honest. But then Madden took off with it, and away we went.
And you know what? Now, TNA and Spike may be saying whatever they want and you know, denouncing it, but they've got to be loving it. They're getting people talking about TNA in the network. Blitz.
But then that brings up another point. If it is indeed a work,
that may not. You know what, Sean? It may not. Sean, hang on a second. It may not be a work. Maybe initially this was all just off the fly. Boy, that was a bad comment. Off the fly. You know what I mean. It was just happening as it was going on. And then TNA realized, you know what, we can do something with this. And now they could be having Hemi playing character and act like she's disgusted by it, blah, 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 and they may make an angle out of this. Who knows? But initially, continue, Blitz. I mean, what are you saying about this?
I'm saying that if they turn it into an angle, if they turn it into a work like that, whether it's a whole angle, then I'm not down for that.
Mojo, you agree with Sean?
Yes, if they make it into an angle, to be fair, I agree with Sean, but at the same time, if they're going to make it into an angle, they need to make it seem like Aries is somewhat the victim here. Because, like I said before, if it really bothered, if it really, you know, if she really had an issue with it personally, instead of putting it out on Twitter, she should have went to Aries' face behind the closed curtain after the match and said, hey, you know, I didn't feel right with
Ashley, let's say it is now turning into a work. Let's say Hemi's doing this because she's now playing her character out on Twitter, which a lot of wrestlers do, and now that she's starting to run with, you know what, I didn't like this. I'm the defenseless ring announcer. And you said Aries is the victim. Is that what you meant to say? Or do you mean to say Hemi's the victim?
In a way,
how can Aries be a victim? He's the heel.
In a way, they're both the victim. But like I said, you know, Hemi should have moved. Aries should have picked a different turnbuckle. They're both victims in this case. But that's just my opinion.
Okay. Blitz Forrester, what's your take on D'Lo Brown being transformed into a prospect and having to earn his cut again?
Personally, I'm hoping that it leads to D'Lo being shipped strictly to backstage, off screen.
You know what? I'm going to be honest here, Sean. I understand what you're saying. D'Lo hasn't been an active competitor for how many years?
Quite a few.
But the matches that I've seen him in and the segments that he's done have been quality, in my opinion. I thought he did one heck of a match, you know, when he was on, I'm trying to remember how to brain lapse who he was wrestling, Angle, wasn't it? Yeah. I thought he performed very well, especially for somebody who hasn't been in the ring for as long as he has been. His you know, he's not the bobblehead doll like he was in the WWF back in the day. I mean, it just seems like to me, at least, his character is more realistic this time around, and he's actually portraying it well. Bo, what are you thinking?
I honestly haven't seen Aces, you know, Aces or D'Lo's involvement in Aces and Eight, so I couldn't can't give you my expert opinion on it.
Right, fair enough. Mojo, have you seen it?
I really haven't. Okay. Honestly, I think the whole Aces and AIDS thing has been outplayed. I think they need to end it. Because, you know, I was interested at first, but now it's just like, come on, just end it. Like, it's miserable. But that's, like I said, that's my opinion, you know, so.
Well, I know Blitz Forrester's not a big fan of Aces and AIDS, correct?
Kick them out.
You know, the funny thing about this is I have mixed feelings on Aces and AIDS. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell anybody that I think everything they've done with this program has been flawless or top-notch or great, because it hasn't been. I am going to applaud TNA for actually sticking to something. I'm actually going to applaud TNA for actually developing a storyline, even if it's not the greatest in the world. At least they aren't abandoning something after 2 weeks and just brushing it under the rug, which is what they are very known to do. You know, at least they're playing something out and not insulting the intelligence of the wrestling fans by acting like it didn't happen after 2 weeks. I mean, here you had Magnus turn on Joe, and then 2 weeks later they're teaming. I mean, that kind of crap drives me nuts because it makes no sense. I don't care even if it was a common enemy now, but it just doesn't jive with me. At least TNA is doing something with a storyline. And I've said this before on this program, if I'm not mistaken. You know what? I didn't like the Clara Lynch storyline, but at least they did something. Aces and Eights isn't the best creation in the world. There's a lot of NWO ripping off in here. It's not new. It's not original. But at least they're giving us a story, and I will give them that. What else do we have for TNA before we move on? Blitz Forrester.
Oh, here's the they're finally putting the gut check guy to good use.
How so?
They're putting the gut check qualifiers that won into a tournament.
Okay.
With the winner of the tournament getting a spot in the upcoming Bound for Glory series.
Obviously, this just occurred on last night's program that I haven't seen yet. Is that correct, Blitz?
Right. I'm not giving away spoilers on.
Okay.
Well,
now you got me interested at least to finish watching the show. Guys, we're down to our last segment of the night. Once again, we want to thank Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Network, Radio Network, for allowing Pro Wrestling Obsession Live to be on every Friday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. It's time for that segment where we go back. We take a step back in time. And the yesteryear of professional wrestling, things that happened this week in previous years gone by. Blitz Forrester and Bo Meister lead the program on what we call Back in Time. Gentlemen, which one of you will be starting tonight?
I am.
Okay, Blitz Forrester, this week in pro wrestling history, what happened?
The first one, May 19th. 1946.
You're going way back there, brother.
Yes. The birth of the one, the only Andre the Giant.
Rock on. Bo Johnson, what do you got?
Let's pull back really recently here. May 20th, 2011. The great Macho Man, Randy Savage, passed away.
It was this week, wasn't it?
Oh, rest in peace, Macho Man.
Absolutely. Blitz Forrester.
Okay. We're going to take another trip deep into the bowels of wrestling history. 1963, May 19th. The Destroyer defeats Rikidōzen in Osaka, Japan. And this is huge because it opens the door for more foreign superstars to come in.
Right. Nice, nice. Bowmeister.
All right, let's travel 2 days before Destroyer's defeat of Rikidōzen.
Okay.
15th, 1963, Bruno Sammartino wins the WWF Championship from, is it Rogers?
Buddy Rogers, right. And that's who he took it from in 18 seconds or something like that, wasn't it?
I believe so.
Complete squash. I know it was maybe it meant 48 seconds, but it was less than a minute.
All right.
Blitz Forrester.
And this is one that is near and dear to Bowmeister's heart. May 20th, 1994, the professional wrestling debut of Lightning Mike Quackenbush.
Whoa, Mike Quackenbush. Rock on. Bowmeister.
Okay.
What
May 15th, 2000. The Nature Boy, Ric Flair, defeated Jeff Jarrett to win his 15th recognized world championship.
And that's a key word, recognized.
I have one.
Who said you get to play this game? You're taking time away from these. This is these guys' moment. And you want to take time away from... Guys, are you allowing Mojo to throw one out?
Go for it.
Okay,
well,
Mojo, what do you got?
This is actually from yesterday. Judgment Day, LA, WWE, main event. Yeah, I watched it. Brutal match. JBL defeated Eddie Guerrero for the WWE Championship.
Ooh.
Mm.
That was a brutal one.
Blitz Forrester, what do you got?
Okay. Since we have time for some more.
No, we have plenty of time.
May
17th, you guys have 15 minutes for this stuff, guys. I'm sorry, Sean.
And
go
we
ahead.
We got it. May 17th, 1997, Jeeve Richards suffers a neck injury at the hands of Terry Funk, temporarily paralyzed. This, along with the broken vertebrae suffered later in the year, would lead to the neck troubles that on his career even to this day.
Interesting. Interesting. Bowmeister.
Okay, May 17th, 1949, referee Earl Hebner was born.
Along with his evil twin brother Dave.
Yes. Not good, Dave.
All right. Blitz Forrester.
Tomorrow.
Oh. I hear Mojo chomping at the bit over there.
Mojo, if you're chomping at the bit, go ahead.
Actually, this is tomorrow. It will be exactly 11 years since the British Bulldog Davey Boy Smith passed away.
Oh. Ooh. Sean.
All right. May 21st, 2001. Triple H tears his quad in a tag title match with Stone Cold versus Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho, which during the match, Triple H came in to break up a pin and asking for his quad, and still finished the match when Jericho put him in the Walls of Jericho on the announce table.
Wow. Bowmeister.
Okay, let's go to May 15th, 2011. MVP's crowned the first IWGP Intercontinental Champion. I believe
MVP.
He won that on American soil, if I remember correctly.
You know where?
I want to say New York.
Okay. Blitz?
May 21st, 1952. Lutez unites the California version of the World Heavyweight Championship with the NWA World Title. This is important for two reasons. One, it's the first time in over 50 years that there was anywhere close to an undisputed world champion in wrestling. And also, it was a record gate for the time, $103,277. This was a record at the time.
Where was it held at, do you know?
I wasn't able to find that, but I'm going to check that and get back to y'all on that.
Yeah, please do. I'm interested to see where it was held at. You said it was in Los Angeles?
The California world title was merged with the NWA world title.
It didn't say where the location was even at as far as city or anything then, right?
Right.
Okay, look into that. I'm kind of curious.
Bowmeister.
I'm sorry, Bodie. Blitz, do you have it?
It was in Hollywood.
Okay. Was it the Hollywood Bowl? I mean, was it an indoor arena or?
At Gilmore Baseball Park.
Ah, interesting. That is interesting. I would never guessed on something like that. Bowmeister.
Excuse me. May 16th, 1961, The Godfather was brought into the world.
Oh. The Godfather, Charles Wright. The Good Father. Comma, the Supreme Fighting Machine. Papa Shango. The Soul Taker.
Oh, yes.
Blip.
All right. We have May 19th, 2011. Ring of Honor announces that it's been bought by Sinclair Broadcast.
Sinclair. What year was that?
That was 2011.
Oh, I was not supposed to say 2009. I was to say, is that long ago already?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Bowmeister.
May 21st to 2000, Triple H won the WWF Championship at Judgment Day from The Rock in an Iron Man match.
Yeah, the Iron Man match, yes. Blitz.
Okay. And unless Bo comes up with something fast, this is the last one we have.
Okay.
May 16th, 1996, the professional debut of Adam Scrap Iron Pierce.
Ah, that's interesting. Bowmeister, do we have any more?
No, but I do want to bring up, I think you had mentioned it last week, Rick.
Okay.
To remind you to bring up the retirement of Kenta Kobashi.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
We had ran out of time last week.
Yeah, we've got 5 minutes left to talk, so let's discuss this.
Okay.
Go ahead, Bo. You're up.
All right. Well, I haven't actually watched the show yet. I think I just found, the whole show, just like
Didn't somebody post the whole show on Pro Wrestling Obsession?
I think they just posted the retirement match and the pre-match ceremony.
Okay. They didn't put the entire card then. Okay.
Yeah, the entire card hadn't been posted.
Okay.
What I found interesting was right before even the beginning of the show, we had a special appearance by Hayabusa.
Oh, cool.
Came out and gave a respect to Kobashi. He was on crutches, his forearm crutches.
Right. What else have you seen on the card? Anything else yet? Or
the card, I mean, in terms of the matches, the card looks pretty stacked. Just looking at simple results here. And the main event, Kobashi's final match, went about 40 minutes.
Did it really?
So,
it sounds like they've done this retirement up well. I mean, we've seen a lot of retirement specials that haven't exactly gone out with a bang, but it seemed like they really did this one up. I have not yet had an opportunity to see it as well, but that's definitely something I want to check out. Ashley, have you seen anything on it?
I actually only saw the main event.
Okay.
One of the people on PWO, I think it's Pro Wrestling Art, he actually uploads matches from each show on his YouTube page, which is youtube.com/ProWrestlingARK. He did just have it as ARK, but his account got suspended for copyrighted material, apparently.
Uh-oh.
So shout out to him for uploading the videos, because that's how I keep my info checked on Pro Wrestling NOAH. So shout out to them.
Excellent. What else, guys? We got about 2 minutes left. What else do we want to talk about here before we wrap it on up tonight? Sean, I noticed that you made no comment about Vader's birthday this last week. Did you miss it?
No, I didn't have to.
I mean, I posted happy birthday to Vader on the PWO page, and no comments from Sean the Vader Mark Forrester.
Did you happen
to notice, Sean, as well, I posted an ad for one of the promotions out in California, and Vader was right in the middle of it.
Yeah, I saw that. That's going to be one heck of a card. And I feel bad for whoever's got to get in the ring with him.
Exactly. The Battle of the Bulge is still going on the Pro Wrestling Obsession page. Again, www.facebook.com/ProWrestlingObsession. We're all there. But Battle of the Bulge is raging on. We're getting to the final rounds here. Round number three. We just had Andre the Giant going up against the one-man gang today. So if you want to vote, by all means, get in there, ask for to join up. I will be more than happy to have any of you in. As far as this show, we are winding up here with the last 30 seconds of the show. I want to thank my co-host, Sean the Blitz Forrester, again, our world PWO World Trivia Wrestling Champion of the World. I want to thank the Bowmeister, as always, who's done an outstanding job, and my hero, Ashley Mojo Farmer. I am the Prophet, Rick Craig. Please join us next week as we'll have Joey Image from PWO Infamy joining us live. Until then, we'll see y'all later. Have a good one.